This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
One thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will, and it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. That's a21r.com. And, of course, newcaliforniastate.com. newcaliforniastate.com. State of the future, like it or not, here it is. It's happening, it's here, and some people might not, I don't want to stay to the future. Well, you know, it's not what you like, it's what you need. Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, it's wants and needs is what it comes down to. And that's what we're talking about here on Agenda 21 Radio. With this in mind, that don't you need a better state than what you got? You got a dictator running the show. Yeah, it's a dictatorship, and we're going to be talking about that. But first, I want to get back into, we left the hour, in the last hour, with the president. The president is holding a news conference, and basically he's spiking the football, as he should. And what I mean by that, of course, is the fact that the president, El Presidente, Donald J. Trump, has basically what he's got going on is a pretty good role, if you know what I mean. A good role. He has single-handedly kind of defeated all these crazies out there, and we're really happy about that, the crazies in the sense that you've got a lot of people that are on edge, I guess you can say, but he's out here pontificating about the fact that the jobs numbers are just over the top, which is wonderful. They're expecting over 20% unemployment. It drops down to 13-point-something, which is huge. And, of course, the jobs numbers go up, way up. And that's something that's been pretty much unexpected. And you can get the full rundown on that by going to Agenda 21 Radio. A21R.com on your dial. And you can see for yourself what those numbers look like. It's staggering, actually. It's absolutely staggering. And just a wonderful thing to say, really, about the resiliency of the American people and what we've been doing. You know, we American people have been doing a fantastic job of, coming out and being very, very responsible, So we're really happy to see this. The numbers are very compelling. And, it's a testament to what this president has done. So we're going to go back to the press conference. And we're about, 20-some minutes into the press conference. I don't know how much longer he's going to talk. And quite frankly, because of our system in here, we don't have the content of what he had before. So we're gonna butt right in. And again, this is a big moment for the president, a big moment for this country, because we are back. We are back economically, and this is a big, big sign going forward. The riots, that's not working either. You know, here we go with the Democrats now. Here we go with the communists. We call them NASCOMs, actually. They're Nazi communists. They're doing the same. They're putting both playbooks together to try and take down the United States. It's not working. Anyway, so let's go down this now, trying to destroy this presidency, okay? First we have Russiagate, then we had Stormy Daniels. Ha ha, the porn queen, Stormy Daniels. Then, what do we have? We're going to impeach him, right? Over the Ukraine. We're going to do that. Then we had the COVID virus. And then we had the riots. Now, that's five things. He calls out he goes in and says, hello. What we're going to do is Insurrection Act. Shocking. 1807 Insurrection Act. Which, by the way, New California has been pounding on the table for weeks now. We've got 101 grievances out there. 101 grievances that all say that we are praying for the president to institute the Insurrection Act. And he does. And of course, this is right at the height of the rioting going on. All of a sudden, the left's going, we can't have the Insurrection Act. So they back off. And of course, then you got Easley, and you got Mattis, and what was it? I think his name is Martin. The deep staters, including our own current Secretary of the Defense, who doesn't like the way the president's doing things, right? Well, of course, someone, I guess, didn't give the memo to Easley, I guess he's signing a bill here. I'm going to jump in on this. But Easley didn't get the memo.
Water demolitions.
And, of course, not getting the memo was a bad deal for him, because what it meant was that Donald J. Trump basically could come in and he could do whatever he wanted to. After all, he's a president. It's the last time I checked.
What's your plan?
Because our country is so strong.
He's trying to sign this bill. Or I don't know what the bill is. I didn't get it.
We had the strongest economy anywhere in the world. And now we're going to have an economy that's even stronger.
Sir, how would a better economy... Yeah, just to follow up, how would a better economy have protected George Floyd? Sure, I'll ask after.
Will you take questions after, sir?
Black unemployment went up by 0.1%. Asian American unemployment went up by 0.5%. How is that a victory?
You are something.
How is that a victory?
Thank you very much.
There you go.
I have to say, though, it's been an honor. This is such a great achievement. Feel so good about it. This is just the beginning. The best is yet to come. Mike, would you say a few words, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And today's a great day for America. The American comeback begins today. And, Mr. President, it is a tribute to the strong decisions that you made early on to put the health of America first, from suspending all travel from China, calling on the American people to embrace the kind of mitigation practices, to practice social distancing, to endure 45 days to slow the spread. The way you worked in a bipartisan way, we want to thank members of both parties in the Congress for working with us to provide relief for families, small businesses, and enterprises across the country. Today's numbers, historic as they are a testament to the to the leadership that you've provided, Mr. President, on mitigation, on recovery, and as you directed the White House Coronavirus Task Force, they're also a tribute to the fact that states across the country, now all 50 states, are reopening our country. Even before we came to the end of the 45 days, you directed us to give guidance to state governors and all the states and territories to safely and responsibly reopen. And now all of our states are in the process of doing that. It's remarkable to think that 2.5 million jobs and declining unemployment number actually dates to surveys done in mid-May. Mr. President, it's remarkable that we can see all across the country that that this is a snapshot today of the comeback that was taking place the better part of a month ago. But because of the guidance you gave to the American people in mitigation, and because of the recovery efforts that bipartisan members of Congress supported at your direction, and ultimately because we are reopening the country, we've begun a great American comeback. So I want to thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank members of Congress that were with us. I join you in thanking all of the incredible healthcare workers across the country, including our team on the task force and health officials at every level, governors that have been our partners. But ultimately, today is a tribute to the American people. Mr. President, I know that you've said again and again this morning that it was because the patient was strong in the beginning, because the policies that you put into place to cut taxes, roll back regulation, unleash American energy, fight for free and fair trade, we created more than 7 million jobs. And today, the strength and resilience of the American people is shining through. And this is their day. Congratulations, America. The comeback begins.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think very importantly, because it's a great state and you have so many great states involved with energy, but we had basically a disaster just a month ago. We had a disaster with respect to energy. It was down to zero. It was worthless. And that's 5 million jobs, maybe much more than that indirectly, probably close to 10 million jobs, energy jobs in Texas and North Dakota and Oklahoma and many other states. New Mexico, great state, great energy state it's become. And we saved that industry in a short period of time. And you know who helped us? Saudi Arabia and Russia. And then we got Mexico to do what they really had to do. And I want to thank the president of Mexico. He was terrific. In the end, he was terrific. But we saved the energy industry. That would have been catastrophic to lose it. And now it's up to almost $40 a barrel. And people would have said that's impossible. But we got Saudi Arabia, Russia, and others to cut back very substantially. OPEC Plus. We call it OPEC Plus. But they were the leaders. And we appreciate that very much. Could I ask Kevin and Larry to say a few words, please?
Thank you, sir. I'll be brief as I can. I know it's pretty darn hot.
I haven't noticed. Is it hot? Nobody hot.
You're pretty good at it. So preceding this number were a number of green shoots, as we call them in economics or finance. And as the president has mentioned, things like, you know, Apple mobility, traveling indexes, the housing applications for new homes are skyrocketing, new businesses and new business applications are skyrocketing. So we've seen a lot of pieces of evidence. The key to today's number, 2.5 million payrolls and 3.8 million households from which the unemployment comes, the key is that those who were temporarily laid off have gone back to work, 3 million some odd. And that's because of the reopening, and that's because of the success of the president and vice president's mitigation policies, which had to be taken. Now the reopening begins. Here's a footnote. At May 12th, for the week the survey was taken, a little less than 50% of small businesses had reopened. According to the Chamber of Commerce, the most recent number in late May, early June, 79% of small businesses have reopened. So we're going to see more continued progress in the June jobs numbers when they come out. And I want to add also my friend and colleague, Secretary Steven Mnuchin's leadership on the payroll protection program has kept people on temporary call, have kept them furloughed, but they knew they were going to come back. The PPP has distributed $510 billion and has probably saved as much as 50 million jobs. And overall, we've extended tax rebates and other payments, 159 million Americans, for nearly $275 billion. The rescue package works. It was the largest in American history. Now, we are seeing weekly unemployment claims coming down, continued claims coming down. The 13.3% unemployment rate has come down. And I think, as the President has noted, these trends will continue. This was a sharp, tough, heartbreaking pandemic contraction. It's not a typical economic contraction. It was like a bad hurricane or a bad snowstorm. There's a lot of heartache in that, and there's a lot of hardship in that, absolutely. But they're sharp and fast, and they recover fast. And we are beginning to see this rapid recovery, which I believe will extend well into the third quarter and the fourth quarter. We're still looking for some 20% economic growth in Qs 3 and 4 and a big number in 2021 as we move forward with presidential policies of lower taxes and regulations and energy and fair and reciprocal trade deals that created a phenomenal economy before the pandemic and can recreate and rebuild that phenomenal economy afterwards. And I bring in my great pal, Kevin Hassett.
Good job. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. And today is a historic day, but as you remind us, there's still a lot of work left to do. That, you know, there were 18 million people that said that they expected to be reemployed. 3 million of them came back, and it shocked economists that it happened so fast. But there's still a lot of work to do, and that's what you've instructed us to do, is to give you options so that we can get everybody else in the country back to work. And I think that the main economic lesson I take from what we've seen, in addition to Secretary Mnuchin's incredible work getting the programs enacted quickly, is that the Vice President's leadership with the task force, right at the very beginning, you put out guidance for businesses and for governors about how to open safely. And because the guidance was so scientifically based, people did so with confidence. And you would never have a jobs number like what we saw today without the confidence that I think was generated by your leadership, Mr. Vice President, and Dr. Birx and the rest of her team. So thank you so much for your service, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to add, we'll be going for a payroll tax cut. We think that'll be incredible in terms of what we're doing because, again, we're going to be bigger, stronger, better than we ever were. That's going to be a tremendous incentive for businesses and also a great incentive, and maybe to me, most importantly, for the workers. So we're going to be asking for a payroll tax cut. We'll be asking for additional stimulus money because once we get this going, it'll be far bigger and far better than we've ever seen in this country. That includes as of 3 or 4 months ago when everyone thought it was great, and it was great. And we're going to be doing things for restaurants and various pieces of the entertainment industry, which will be an incentive, whether it's deductions or whatever. But Steve Mnuchin's going to be working on that because the restaurants will be a little bit harder to come back. Although I must tell you, Mike, I've seen some tremendous numbers from restaurants. But we're looking at doing something in terms of an incentive with taxes. It could be deductions. It could be something else. But we'll be announcing it pretty soon. But we will be asking, despite the numbers and how good they are, because we will be so far ahead of everybody else if we do what we're doing. Our borrowing cost now is zero. So we're paying no interest, which is very good. And I just want to thank everybody. I'd like to ask Steve Mnuchin to say a few words, please.
Thank you, Mr. President and Mr. Vice President. And again, I want to especially thank the Senate and the House for working with us in another example of overwhelming bipartisan support that is helping American business and American workers. Mr. President, this legislation is a direct result of you invited in leaders from the restaurant industry and the hotel industry. These are two areas that have been especially hard hit. The restaurant's number one ask was extending the PPP for 24 weeks, and this legislation delivers on this. So it is great to see the $500 billion that we've put to work in small business make its way into the economy, and now you see it in these numbers in them bringing more people back to work. So not only did this save jobs, but we now see people coming back to work, and we look forward to working with Congress on bipartisan issues to make sure we get every American back at work. that was unfortunately laid off as a result of this virus. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, that about wraps it up for the president's press conference. Get a little contentiousness going on there, and with some of the media folks. Which, hey, that's just the way it is. If you want to call in, you can do so. The call in lines are wide open now, and you can call in. The number is 215-867-8255, and we'll take your calls and put them on air for you. The president, of course, signing additional legislation to help bring more money to the market to help what he's trying to do is help food services in general to come back. And it's a big long ways, of course, for all these places to come back. What's coming back? And the big celebration, naturally, is what's been going on with the jobs report and with all the things that's been happening there. It's just been incredible, actually. The performance of this economy and the resilience, you know, and I think one of the takeaways from the press conference was one of the speakers, I think it was Pence, said, you know, Mr. President, it was, as you said, it was a very, very healthy patient before it got sick. That's why it survived so well. And of course, these numbers that we're seeing today, only 13 million going for unemployment, which they expected well over another 20 million, didn't happen. Which meant that, you know, guess what? We're going back up again. And I think they brought out that there are about 3 million people who got their jobs back, basically, that were, furloughed and things like that, that came right back. And you're going to see another, I'll tell you, in the weeks ahead, you're going to see another boom, boom, boom on these jobs reports as he starts to hammer down. And like a recovering ill person or patient, they're always sort of a little bit better and a little bit stronger after they get recovered. I know that for a fact, and I think everybody else does. We have a caller, Matthew. Matthew, welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. You have a comment? Matthew?
Hey, Paul. How's it going, buddy?
Good. What's really going on?
Not much. Just hanging out here in the mountains.
And what's your comments?
I was getting back to what you were talking about before Trump with Candace Owens about George Floyd.
Yeah, that's
a. I was wondering if you checked out that Neon Revolt YouTube video I sent you yesterday.
Didn't have a chance to see it yet, but I think I know the content. Explain what it is.
Yeah, so Neon Revolt and some digital anons are digging up on that George Floyd case there. And they've came up with some pretty good stuff, as in the owner of that nightclub is a Somalian Muslim-based crime organization that's into counterfeit money.
Oh, shocking counterfeit money.
Shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah, he was trying to pass a $20 counterfeit at the store when all that stuff happened. But if you watch that Neon Revolt video, it ties into what you were saying earlier about Amy Klobuchar and the border up there on the Indian reservation in Canada, how it's open.
Right.
Open border.
Well, and a little tap in on that. Just hang on a second. I'll get your thoughts. Yeah, it's the Red Lake Indian Reservation. And, of course, its counterpart down south is the Tohono, or whatever it is, Indian Reservation. I don't mean to mispronounce it. But I mispronounced it. Sorry. Anyway, that's the same sort of situation. Half the reservations in Arizona, half is in Mexico, so there's no border restrictions there. They can go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And of course, it's a great way if you've got the northern one up there in Minnesota, and of course that's Amy Klobuchar, the John McCain counterpart to the north. Get it? We get this. What's going on here? That Indian reservation also is free for transients from Canada into the United States because it's half in the United States, half in Canada. So it opens up the borders, basically, is what it does. And counterfeiting, of course, is one of the essence of what they do in that one of those communities. And what it's designed to do is, especially it's a $20 bill, you know, that's a very small denomination. But, you know, counterfeiting and people's confidence in cash currency or currency in general for eons, thousands of years, has always been questionable. And if they're trying to basically print counterfeit money to basically weaken our economy. You got to think about that, because that's one way to destroy our economy. Of course, my understanding, what should have happened if it was a counterfeit bill, they should have brought in the Secret Service right away to investigate. Have they even done that yet? It's a counterfeit bill. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. The Secret Service is in charge of counterfeit currency. And normally what happens is that they're called in right away. Have they been called, or am I giving it away? Now they're going to make the call because they heard it on Agenda 21 Radio. I know they listen up there. You know, says, I know they listen. So we'll have to wait and see. What is the delay? And that's something that the Justice Department needs to look into. What about all the counterfeiting that's coming out of that area of Minnesota? And should somebody like an Amy Klobuchar, who is definitely related to gun smuggling, gun running, purchasing of guns, and, oh, by the way, from where? The Ukraine. You got great pictures of Amy Klobuchar and John McCain side by side with Ukrainian military, with soldiers holding up the Ukrainian flag. With, you know, of course, they're deeply involved, McCain in particular and Klobuchar, in gun running out of the Ukraine. They have a lot to hide, don't they?
Yep. I'll give you one guess. What country you think these counterfeit bills, these Muslims are bringing in from Canada to the U.S. on that Indian reservation? What country are the counterfeit bills coming from?
Well, I would say some of the counterfeit, probably China or Iran, but China.
You hit it. Bingo. Nail on the head. China. Guess what else that Muslim group is bringing in from China across that border?
Speak closer to the microphone.
What other contrabands coming in from China across that border on that Indian reservation?
Well, fentanyl.
Someone gave you a hint earlier.
Fentanyl.
Yep, fentanyl. The thing that was in George's system and the counterfeit bill that was in his hand
came from China.
All from his employer at that nightclub, this Somalian criminal organization in bed with China.
Yep.
Check out that video, Neon Revolt. Everybody get on there, check that out. It's and you'll understand.
Well, yeah, and you know, the other thing too, you know, we got a long ways to go with this, and of course, you know, Candace Owen, she'll be speaking on behalf of New California in October, actually, and it's going to be just before the election. Shocking how that's going to work out, but she's going to be doing a 3-day.
Oh, October is not going to be September at the Constitution?
No, the Constitution. Well, we're holding back on who we're presenting at the Constitutional Convention, brother. We're holding back. You've got Candace Owen, who's going to be out here in California in three different locations, and we'll be talking about that. She hit the nail on the head. Fentanyl and methamphetamine.
Yep.
What could possibly go wrong with an individual who's on fentanyl and methamphetamine? You know, and the other part, the fentanyl certainly is not going to help him breathing, by the way. I'm not saying what happened.
No,
but who's investigated Coven, the Chauvin guy, the police officer? Who's investigated him? Well, let's see. Agenda 21 Radio did. And in fact, if you go and do your WikiLeaks, you'll find out that this guy is all over the map. He's been all over. First, he was down. Some of the first stuff that comes out of WikiLeaks from him is he's a member of FARC, or has been involved with FARC. You know, the Colombian drug smuggling ring down there. This was coming up, I think, as early as 2009. He's not a very old guy. You know, that's 12 years ago. He would have been, in his early 30s. But he's definitely involved. And by that, I think there's 43, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but somebody I think is going to text me and correct me. But I think there was 43 or something like that WikiLeaks on this guy, and it's all drug related. It's all CIA based, and so he's the guy who ends up being the killer after the two of these guys, Floyd and him, worked together at this Somali based crime syndicate, this nightclub. And of course, we know how active the CIA, the dirty CIA, is in Minnesota. Remember Jesse Ventura? That one of the first things that surprised him when he became governor of Minnesota was down in the basement of the Capitol building was the CIA. And we're like, what?
Yep.
What, the CIA? I mean, this is a story that still hasn't been told yet. It's all going to come out, And Amy Klobuchar, I'm telling you, girlfriend, you just might as well throw up your hands now and put your hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back and say, don't cuff me too tight. Don't use zip ties. You know, please don't use zip ties. That's what's going to happen to Amy Klobuchar. Yeah. You know, that's what was going to happen to John McCain. No one wants to talk about that, but, you know, he was into some big-time gun running. Big time. Big time.
Big time.
So, anyway, thanks a lot, Matthew. We just sort of just cracked that one wide open. All right. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. See you later.
Okay, so Matthew checking in from us. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just kind of got on a little bit of a ramp there. A rant. I ramped it up about talking about Amy Klobuchar. No one's talked about her. She's just a meek little mild monster. They're all snakes. And, you know, thank goodness for someone like Candace Owens. And anyway, if you want to call back in, you can do so. You can call back in at area code 215-867-8255, and it'll put you right up, and you can talk to the whole nation if you want. If you want to talk about Donald Trump, you want to talk about the riots, and will there be more riots? Or is all of a sudden, I just get the feeling that all of a sudden Antifa is starting to realize people are going to their pre-planned, and this is one of the things that Laura Logan brought out, they're going to their pre-planned locations, and they're packing. They're just showing up with guns and militia. And the militias work. Uh-oh. See, they did not figure that the militias would... Listen, what we're doing here in Agenda 21 Radio, New California State, and this is the thing that they cannot stop. And I want you to understand this. They haven't figured out a way to stop the mechanics of originalist constitutionalist. That's their problem, and they can't stop it. You got to remember that everything that is in the Constitution, in the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. Okay, those three documents are sacred. I call them the God documents. Those are the documents that guarantee to us our God-given rights. God-given rights. And it says we have God-given rights. God has given us the rights that we have. The government has not given us these rights. Now, when you take a look at the instructions manual, which is really the instruction manual for all this, is the Declaration of Independence and what's in the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. When you take a look at the mechanical operations, it's right there in front of you. And, you know, we had our constitutional rights suspended. We were told we couldn't do the very first element of the Constitution, go to church and pray. You know, I think it's about time, say hallelujah, brother, that the churches take stock, that the pastors, priests, clerics take stock on their behavior in light of this COVID virus. And now we understand it to be a hoax. They weren't looking hard enough to realize it's a hoax. It's been a hoax. Now, people got sick. People died. I get that. I'm sorry that happened. I got sick. It was bad. So I get it. I have plenty of empathy for everybody. But the bottom line is, it was a hoax. And no one's called it out. We did. The very first couple of days, we said it's a hoax. In other words, instantly, the so-called data pieces from Fauci and Birx were lies. And Donald Trump said that he was told by some very important people who knew much more about the situation than I did. They knew the numbers. And of course, as it turns out, they were lying to the president. And they were lying to the nation, and they were lying to the world. And then, you know, it doesn't take very much to suss this out. Then we start looking at, you know, the president of the World Trade, the World Health Organization. Oh, my God. He's a violent criminal communist, extremist out of Ethiopia, murdering people, butchering people. And they make him the head of the World Health Organization. And this is who's telling us there's a pandemic and that we're going to lose 7 million people? What? And then when we started looking at the numbers, I said, the first day when the numbers came out, I said, first of all, we made the comparison about the numbers. We went to the CDC. This is early in March. And I said, what are the numbers? Well, from October 1st to March, I think it was March 12th, in that range, and I think those we're dealing with the 12th when this came out, the 12th and 13th, these numbers just did not hunt. The dog wasn't hunting. They did not match up. They're saying, oh, it's going to be such a big pandemic, and we've got 100 million. Then, of course, the real numbers come out, and you start looking and go, wait a minute. The death rate, the number of deaths that were documented before the COVID virus by the CDC from October 1st to the 12th of March 2020 were 22,000. That's a bad number. That's bad that all these people died from the influenza. But the numbers weren't even remotely close or projected to be even remotely close for the same time period for the whole world and for the United States. I mean, we had 200 people who had died of the COVID virus at this time. I said, you're not going to get there, folks. You're not going to get there. And then the surprise, surprise. They did the clamp down. They did everything. They shut everything down. And nobody went to work. There's nobody on the freeways. There's nobody running around out there. And all of a sudden, shocking, the death rate plummeted. I mean, the whole overall death rate, plummeted. Yeah, from everything. Why? Because people weren't going to the hospitals and people were not getting sick. They weren't going to the hospital for auto accidents, nothing. So you know what? They started closing hospitals, didn't they? They started with the layoffs. Then they started closing with the hospitals. And then you had governors making this big stress. Blah, 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 blah. All the Democrat governors were saying that Trump's not responding. Trump was responding. First thing he did was shut the whole thing down when he first heard about it in January and stopped planes from flying from China into the United States. And it really impacted California in a very positive way. Wow. Anyway, I'm getting more information now. It says, call out the Oxenazi St. Regis Mohawk gangsters of New York and Canada. They exploited the 1794 Jay Treaty. Shocking. Shocking they would do such things, don't you think? Yeah. Yeah, Al Sharpton was in attendance yesterday. Aren't you shocked by that? Anyway, 215-867-8255 is the call-in number if you want to call in and talk about anything. Okay, I want to get back to, Candace Owens here. I think that was a really, really exquisite display, Candace Owens. I can't remember. Oh, Gateway Pundit. That's right. Here we go. We're going to get back into this for a little bit. She's talking about the Floyd murder and him being a criminal. And don't be shocked about all the things. And don't look at him as a hero. Says she does not support George Floyd. And here's why. This is the name of her article. We're halfway through it.
Please look him up if you haven't seen it. I'm blanking on his last name. His first name is David, who was shot and killed
David
for trying
Dorn.
To protect a pawn shop from looters. An upstanding.
Okay, so what she's done is she's made the comparison about who Floyd was. He was a criminal. Absolute freaking criminal. In the rap sheet, she reads from his rap sheet. I think I can go back and do this.
That I had that made me realize this was a horrible human being that I am not going to pretend was a good person. In 2005, a woman who was pregnant.
Listen to this. This is his crime rap sheet.
And she went to the door, and the person pretended to be someone that worked for the water department. So she opened her door and quickly realized that the person at her door did not work for the water department and attempted to slam it. At the moment that she was attempting to slam it, a Ford pulled up and another five men jumped out of the car, and one of which was George Floyd, came up to the door, and they forced their way inside to her home, inside of her home. Mind you, this woman is pregnant. At that point, George Floyd took out a gun and pressed it to her stomach. She was screaming, begging for her life, and he put her inside of her living room and instructed one of his criminal friends that was with him to watch her and to make sure she didn't leave the living room. So he was playing guard while they ransacked her home looking for drugs and money. They did not find drugs. They ended up taking, I believe, her wallet and her cell phone. Fortunately for her, her neighbor observed what was going on and caught the license plate of the people as they pulled off and called 911. And when 911 was able to, they were able to track down the car of which George Floyd was the driver, and they arrested him. And 2 years later, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison for that instance. Now, you can say, the media is portraying it like he was just getting his life together after, you know, being released in 2014 following that incident. He was just getting his life together and moved and was going to start afresh. I'd like to believe all of those things. And there's a gap, and he never got in trouble for 5 years until this incident when the police were called on him again. But you are defying common sense to believe that this person suddenly became an exemplary character but happened to be high on fentanyl and methamphetamine and trying to use a bill, a fake bill, to purchase something. And so in my opinion, George Floyd was a criminal. He was a criminal. And just because he was a criminal doesn't mean he deserved to die at the knee of a police officer. But it does mean that I am not going to play a part of the broken black culture that always wants to martyr criminals, who wants to pretend they were these upstanding human beings that just wanted to help society, that just wanted to reach out and uplift society. And he has a rap sheet that is long, that is dangerous. He was an example of a violent criminal his entire life. Okay, up until the very last moment. Now, again, I want to be clear. This is not a defense for Derek Chauvin. No one that I have spoken to, no one in the news is defending Derek Chauvin. He is getting what he has coming to him. Okay, great. But why are we pretending that this criminal should be upheld as a citizen, as a martyr?
Okay, so keep this in mind. Chauvin and Floyd worked together at the Somali nightclub where they were distributing and acting as a laundering source for Chinese, are you ready for this? Chinese $20 bills, counterfeit bills. You see, this counterfeit business coming from China, they're trying to destabilize our dollar bill. No one's going to take a phony dollar bill as currency. I mean, you shouldn't. But again, protocol was not followed here, because when you get a $20 bill, it's my understanding, they bring in the Secret Service to examine these things. And to my understanding, they have not done these things yet. Now, why would the police department miss out on that one? Well, I'll tell you why. Because they're in on the deal. The investigators around are in on the deal. They want to, they do not want anybody from the Secret Service to go down there and check out this whole operation, because they might find something really wrong. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
In black America, a martyr for a fake narrative, by the way. Police brutality, racially motivated police brutality, is a myth. Okay, so let's get into that. Not only are we using this death, right, and allowing it to cause these riots and protests, pretending this was some upstanding citizen in the black community who was tackled down and killed for no reason, right? Not only are we allowing it to inspire riots in which black people are dying, in which actual upstanding black citizens are dying. Case in point, I'm sure you guys have all now seen David, the sheriff that just was shot and killed because he was trying to protect a pawn shop. Please look him up if you haven't seen it. I'm blanking on his last name.
His name is Dorn. Name is David. David Dorn.
Who was shot D-O-R-N. And killed for trying to protect a pawn shop from looters. An upstanding citizen. An actual head of a police. He was the head of a police his entire life. 77 years old. Did everything right. Right? So we now have to kill upstanding black citizens because a non-upstanding black citizen, a career black criminal, died. Now, did he deserve to die in that manner? No. I can't say it enough. No, he didn't deserve to die in that manner. But I will be damned if the rest of us upstanding black citizens have to suffer because of this incident that rarely ever happens in America. So here are some numbers for you people that are still believing that police brutality is a real, racially motivated police brutality is a real thing. First
Listen
and
to
foremost,
this.
Okay,
Listen to this.
You have a 25% higher chance as a violent white criminal of dying at the hands of a police officer than you do as a black criminal. Last year, a total of 9 unarmed black men were killed by police officers, and 19 white men were killed by police officers. For those of you that aren't good at mathematics, right, you might be thinking, oh, but Candace, white people represent 60% of the population, and black people represent just 13% of the population. It doesn't matter what percentage of the population you represent, it matters what percentage of the violent criminal community you represent. And unfortunately, black community commits a disproportionate amount of crimes compared to the white community. Let me tell you, 6% of the population, right? Black men, 6% of the population account for 44% of all murders in this country, according to 2018 statistics. That is what you call a gap. And yet white people who represent 60% of the population, we represent 13%, black men are 6%, only represent 50% of all the murders, right? That makes no sense. That makes no sense. A 6-point variation in a community where we are extreme minorities. We commit 50% of all violent offenses, evenly split, and we're only 13% of the population, okay? So we have a lot more encounters with police officers. And don't say the police officers are coming around because we're black. I'm talking about violent criminals. I'm talking about murder, 44% of murders, okay? You want to talk about real statistics? The police officers have way more to be fearful of in the black community than the other way around, okay? We commit, on average, a police officer is 18 and a half times more likely to be killed by a black person than the other way around, okay? So this entire narrative is complete smoke and mirrors. It's all made up. It's just election fodder. It's white versus black because it's an election year, not because black Americans are suffering at the hands of police officers more than white Americans. Do some police officers do the wrong thing? Yes. I don't think there's anybody in the world who has not encountered a police officer and thought this person is an absolute jerk who is power tripping, whether you are black or white. We know they exist. And we know they're always going to exist, by the way, because they're human beings. And sometimes human beings suck. In fact, if you want to attack a community for accidental slayings or brutality, did you know that doctors accidentally kill 250,000 people every year because of mistakes? Do you know there's been doctors that have been arrested for being serial killers?
You know, that's kind of interesting. And again, it goes to my point. When we did the COVID virus thing and everybody stayed away from the hospitals and no one died, the death rate dropped. The death rate dropped by almost 20%. And well, no one was dying in America. Shocking.
Just for killing people because they wanted to. Do we protest and boycott doctors? Do we assume all doctors are horrible human beings because some doctors are? Or do we realize that society is not perfectible? People suck in every profession. It is no excuse to paint society with a broad brush. It is certainly no excuse to accept a Democrat narrative, okay, that black people are being disproportionately hunted down by police officers because of the color of their skin. You want to know the best way to avoid not being brutalized by a police officer is to limit the amount of encounters you need to have with them, especially when it comes to violent crimes. Okay, I am not going to stand for this continual bottom feeding narrative of us martyring people that have had 5, 6, 7 stints in prison and then pretending they were upstanding heroes to our community. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. Excuse my language. It's absolute bullshit, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of having to play pretend. I'm tired of sitting here and being called a coon or an Uncle Tom because I won't play this bottom feeding game with you. If you want to hang up posters of criminals on your wall and talk about them as your martyrs, do it. Do it. You can do it. Kobe Bryant was my idol, okay? I'll keep a photo of Kobe Bryant. You can keep one of George Floyd and pretend he was an upstanding human being that just once or twice put a gun across a pregnant woman's belly. Could you imagine that woman right now? That black woman, by the way? Right? Watching everybody pretend this person was an upstanding human being who just at the age of 42 and 5 prison stints was going to get his life together. I mean, it's embarrassing. We are embarrassing in that regard, right? This is why we have a cycle and a toxic culture, because nobody wants to tell the truth in black America. It's so easy to be a victim. It's so easy to ask black white people to bow down and apologize and do all these things for us. It's crap. It's crap. It's a lie. It's a farce. Our biggest problem is us, okay? It's why we don't talk about it when black-on-black crime happens. It's why we don't talk about it when 40 black people are killed in one weekend during Memorial Weekend in Chicago. We don't want to talk about any of that stuff. We don't want to talk about Baltimore. We don't want to talk about New Jersey. We don't want to talk about any of these places where black people are being slaughtered by other blacks, because that would mean that we had to be personally accountable, right? That would mean personal responsibility. We don't do personal responsibility in our community. We don't do it. We blame white people. Right? We only point a camera to white people when they do something, even though we do it at a way higher rate to ourselves, right? We celebrate our drug dealers. We're the only community, right, that would ever create hashtags to free people from prison because they committed crimes, like free Meek Mill, free this rapper, free this rapper. How hard is it to not spend multiple times in prison? How difficult is that? Is that too hard for us? Is that way too high of a mountain for us to scale, to do the right thing, to be upstanding citizens? That is the call to action that I have for Black America with Blexit. Like, why do we keep fulfilling this narrative? What do you think the perception of us, by the way, is on the outside? You ever look at the comments? You ever go into like an anonymous blog and see what people say? Oh, just black people being black people. I see those racist comments. Oh, just black people got a riot. Black people got to be black people. You know how they are. Oh, just black people being ignorant. That is the perception. When people get to be anonymous and talk about us, that's what they think about us, right? They think that we are the kind of people that will forever uphold criminals as the martyrs of our society, that we will never take account for the things that we do wrong, right? That we don't have it within us to educate ourselves to get ahead. And that for those of us that actually do it, well, we get called coons, right? You got Condoleezza Rice, she's a coon. Larry Elder, he's a coon. Dr. Ben Carson, brain surgeon, first ever to perform the surgery of splitting twins that are connected by the head. He's a coon, right? What a loser he is. What a stupid guy he is. Kanye West says he's not going to be told to do it because of the color of his skin. He's a coon. He's lost. He's in the sunken place. The sunken place. That's where we all are, right? Because we demand more and we will get more out of this society because we're going to get ahead, right? That's what's going to happen. We're going to get ahead. Black conservatives get ahead because we don't subscribe to this narrative. Because you're not going to catch me outside trying to grab a TV pretending that it's because a martyr named George Floyd got killed. Okay? I'm a big believer that no matter what color you are, you do stupid things, you win stupid prizes. Okay? We have to do better. We have to teach our kids better. Or we're not going to get ahead, right? Anyways, this is just a rant because I have been feeling super, super, super annoyed at these depictions in society. I have no apologies here to make. George Floyd is not my martyr. He can be yours. That's all I have to say to Black America.
Well, there you go, right? Candace Owen going to be speaking on behalf of New California State in October. Shocking. Boy, she just says it like it is. This is forget about skin color. This is good for everybody. It's good for everybody. It's nice and healthy, if you know what I mean. I'm shocked by it all. But, you know, this is a different America now, and I think people are starting to really wise up and learn a lot of lessons that needed to be learned, a lot of different things that need to happen right now about all these situations that are going on with all these people and all these, you know, all these Democrats, if you want to call them that. I call them NASCOMs now, Nazi communists, that are trying to overthrow the country. And it's not working. It is not working. You know, and again, when Donald Trump was elected, oh, by the way, I woke up this morning and still my president. I'm so shocked by that. And I know tomorrow when I wake up, he'll be my president. Shocking. Absolutely shocking that he's the president. But, you know, let's run down what they've tried to do to take him out of office. And they have everything at stake here. There's been at least five assaults on trying to remove this president. And it's not worked. Let's go down the first one. The first one, which is now becoming a big blow up in the face and revelations coming out, is the Russian hoax. Then the Stormy Daniels. Then you have the Ukraine thing, which, by the way, the Ukraine stuff. See, what I just laid out there about the Red Lake Reservation and John McCain down south and Amy Klobuchar up north, listen, this is a big revelation that's going to come out yet in the whole Ukrainian hoax deal. You see why they did not want anything to come out about that and why they put up such a big struggle and why they went to impeachment as a process. They needed a diversion to protect their interests because so much will come out. Then you have the COVID virus. Now you have this. Now you have this. The riots. Five attempts. Five failures. And he's still our president. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to sign up to become part of the militia at newcaliforniastate.com. newcaliforniastate.com. Click on Sign Up and Stay Strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.